Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. You know how we used to tell you that for $5 you could try out the razor and the cartridges and the shave butter? Well, now you get a whole lot more for $5, and we'll tell you all about that a little bit later in the podcast. So let's start with the good martini. And Jim, we like to point out that states are the laboratory of democracy, and we've always had a lot of good things to say about Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who, of course, was first elected in 2010 and immediately got to work taking on organized labor. And we know what that led to. It led to huge fights. It led to Democratic lawmakers leaving the state. It also led to legislation passing. It led to court challenges. It led to a recall. And Scott Walker has won every time, which we're happy to report. He's actually won again. And this time the unions were completely egregious in their legal arguments, but the fact that they lost makes this even more delicious. Help here from Jazz Shaw over at Hot Air, as well as the Free Beacon. And this is Hot Air First. The Free Beacon updates us on the right-to-work movement in Wisconsin, where the State Court of Appeals has just delivered a major ruling, which comes as a serious blow to the state's unions. The Badger State passed a right-to-work law back in 2015, which forbid companies from making union membership compulsory as a condition of employment. But the unions have been throwing their full weight into challenging the law and tying it up in court. That may have finally come to an end this week as the justices tossed out one of their final claims. The unions argued that the law was somehow in violation of the state constitution, but the court found otherwise. Here's what the Free Beacon reports. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals unanimously ruled that the state's right-to-work law was constitutional and ordered a district court to dismiss a union lawsuit Tuesday. The three-judge panel effectively ended a suit from a coalition of the state's largest labor unions seeking to block the 2015 law, known as Act One, from taking effect. The court said the unions failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the law, which prohibits companies from mandating union membership as a condition of employment, violated the state constitution, get this, by unlawfully denying them property without compensation. Quote, Act One does not take property within the meaning of the Wisconsin Constitution. The unions have no constitutional entitlement to the fees of non-member employees, the ruling says. Back to Hot Air, what made the union's claim in this case so remarkably outrageous was the way they framed their objection. The plaintiffs claimed that the law deprived them of property without compensation. In essence, what they were saying was that a portion of every worker's paycheck was theirs by right, and passing a law denying them their cut of the money was therefore unconstitutional. So, Jim, a lot of moxie here by the unions, but the court smacked them down and Scott Walker wins again.
You know, Greg, you said give him credit for gumption. I guess that's one word we could use also for outrageousness. Because really, the claim there is that we have a constitutional. There are two things that jump out. One is that, yes, we as the union not only are legally entitled to your dues, to a portion of your paycheck, but any attempt to change the law violates the state constitution. I mean, this is the law. In a whole bunch of states, an increasing majority of states are now right-to-work states. So the idea that, oh, no, no, our Constitution says that you employers can force you to join a union in order to take a particular job, that doesn't, you know, pass the smell test. The idea that, you know, that there's some sort of constitutional requirement that you join a union for a particular job. And then the second thing is that every state was right-to-work at the beginning. Right. You know, and only later on did they see the rise of the labor movement and then the legal requirement that you're required to pay dues. So basically it's an argument that the door only swings one way, that the law can be passed strengthening labor unions, but you cannot repeal that law. You cannot, you cannot change things back. The ratchet only turns one way. And unsurprisingly, that's a nonsense legal argument. Now, you do kind of understand why unions tried this kind of, you know, probably seems like a legal Hail Mary pass. I went up and found the numbers. This is from late 2016. No state has lost more of its labor union membership than Wisconsin. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did the research here. Before Act 10, 2010 or so, 14.2% of workers in Wisconsin were members of a union. By 2015, that was down to 8.3%. That is 132,000 fewer union members. And they said this is mostly teachers and public workers who, now that they're no longer legally required to be a part of the union to do their job, decided to leave. I like the metaphor that the Journal Sentinel used here, or the comparison. That's enough people to fill Lambeau Field and Miller Park with thousands more tailgating outside. So for Wisconsin residents, you got to put it really a picture that they can do that. And it's now near the bottom third of unionized workforce. And this was the birthplace of public employee unions. So a really dramatic change there. And look, you know, people are voting with their feet. This is what they want. It's not the job of the state government to come in and say, well, no. You have to be a part of this this group that you don't want to be a part of.
Congratulations to the court for obviously getting that right. Congratulations to the working people of Wisconsin, as well as to the Walker administration. Jim, I know it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it's, I guess, about 6 years ago now that we saw those raucous protests in the state capitol at Madison, where people were harassing lawmakers, and that was, of course, not the Democrats because they had skipped out of the state trying to avoid a vote. But we saw kind of the hostility of the left when it came to legislation then, shouting things down. And now, of course, that is pretty common in a number of different venues. And we've seen it at Berkeley. We've seen it in various other places lately. Obviously, the 2016 campaign ratcheted up this intolerance for speech someone disagrees with to a whole new level. And now there's a new troubling poll out. This was originally reported by the Washington Post. The survey was conducted by a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, who is also a professor at UCLA, interviewing and polling college students on some of the key questions about free speech. And let's just say the results are incredibly troubling, and the divide between right and left is not nearly what you would hope it would be. First of all, is hate speech protected? First of all, they don't define what that is. Nonetheless, only 39% say that it is, 44% say no. Among Democrats, self-identified Democrats, 39% say it is protected, 41% say no. Only 44% of self-identified Republicans say that hate speech is protected, 39% say no. A pretty big breakdown between men and women. Women, 49% think it's not protected, only 31% think it is. And among men, 51% think it is protected, while 38% say no. Should it be okay to shout down controversial speakers and prevent them from actually speaking? Yes, 51%. No, 49%. They're a pretty big divide here. Democrats say yes, you can do it by a 62-38 margin. Republicans say no, 61-39. Also, men think it's better to do that or more okay to do that than women by about 10 points. Is violence okay to disrupt? A fifth of everybody says, yeah, that's okay. 19% of everybody says yes, 20% of Democrats, 22% of Republicans, 10% of women, 30% of men. And then the final question, if you had to choose one of the options below, which do you think it is more important for colleges to do? Option one, create a positive learning environment for all students by prohibiting certain speech or expression of viewpoints that are offensive or biased against certain groups of people. Or option two, create an open learning environment where students are exposed to all types of speech and viewpoints, even if it means allowing speech that is offensive or biased against certain groups of people. Option one defeated option two, 53-47. Among Democrats, it was 61-39. Republicans only chose option two, 53-47, Jim. So there is a lot of work to do here, if it's not too late already, to get college students to understand what free speech really is.
You know, there are a lot of scapegoats here, Greg, but I put most of the blame on former Vermont Governor Howard Dean and CNN morning anchor Chris Cuomo, two individuals who've said in recent debates, well, you know, the First Amendment doesn't protect hate speech. Well, yes, it does, right? Part of one of the problems is that there's no really good, clear definition of what hate speech is, right? I mean, you go to the stands of a Yankee Red Sox series, you're going to hear a lot of hate speech in the stands, right? You know, is it something that is just a nasty and obnoxious? Is it an expression of I hate you? Is it an expression of a hateful group? When do we say, oh, that statement isn't merely bothersome or unpleasant or you know, provocative? It is hate speech, and we must stamp it out. Like a lot of things, this is in the eye of the beholder. And what these college students basically say is, I want to be able to ban hate speech, meaning speech that I don't like, but I don't want someone else to suppress my speech. Right? This is, you know, it's unsurprising you would see these kind of responses like this. You want to put some blame on the students? Absolutely. How about the professors? All of these are college students. What were they taught in high school? There was kind of a really unnerving tweet. I want to say it came from Jay Cost or something, who basically said, look, we haven't really done a very good job of teaching civics in this country for the better part of a generation, and now it's caught up with us. And then, you know, this is when they had the sheer number of Americans who could not name any part of the Bill of Rights, who could not name very basic facts about the United States. And, you know, the argument of like, well, we don't want to have a poll test or some sort of test to see whether you should be allowed to vote if you can't pass the test. But we have a large number of Americans who do not know squat about squat. And the, what is replacing what ordinarily would be the traditional understanding of America, our rights, the Constitution, what the laws actually say, things like that. We're getting, it's being filled with this kind of loosey-goosey, touchy-feely, well, people shouldn't offend each other. Well, that is a social more. That is not actually the law, right? I actually, you know, there are times where public debate does get ugly in my eyes. It does get, in my eyes, inappropriate, coarse, vulgar, nasty, generating more heat than light. Look, there's plenty of reasons to say, you know, I really don't like that kind of speech. But that's different from saying I want the government to come in and ban that kind of speech, or I want the government to punish people for making this kind of speech. I want college administrators to suspend someone for having that kind of speech or something like that. And what's really kind of intriguing is that people, I'm not far from the first to make this argument, but a lot of people, it's becoming clearer and clearer. College students now increasingly believe that their purpose is not really education. And inevitably, education is about learning something you didn't already know, which means you have to encounter something that is unfamiliar to you. And if it's unfamiliar to you, you may like it, but in a lot of cases, you're not going to like it, right? I don't know if you can understand an issue really well by only studying one perspective on it. If you wanted to learn about American history or the Civil War, yeah, you know what? You probably should know why the Confederates thought they were fighting. Now, you may or may not find it accurate. You may find it kind of self-serving. You may find it a certain amount of denial, but you should at least understand, in the eyes of the Confederates, why did they fight that? Why did the British think they were right to try to keep us as a colony in the Revolutionary War? You can go through every great disagreement or struggle in American life, and you probably want to try to understand what motivated each side if you really want to understand the issue. And I think what comes through in a lot of these polling results is a lot of college students don't really want to understand these things. They're perfectly comfortable with their limited amount of knowledge, and exposure to that different viewpoint actually makes them feel threatened. And I think it's not actually, oh, I think that this person, you know, I think Charles Murray is going to beat me up or something like that. I think what it is that, oh, Charles Murray has really studied this stuff. Charles Murray has you know, really done his homework on this, knows it backwards and forwards, and has come to conclusions that I'm not comfortable with. And it makes me feel insecure. Maybe I don't know this well enough. Maybe I actually have overlooked something, or I haven't actually dug into this topic enough. And I think it's that insecurity, right, that when we encounter someone who we not only disagree with, but they make us feel kind of stupid. Nobody likes that feeling. So the easiest way to deal with it is to lash out and say, they have to go away. We have to wipe them away from the discussion. We just drive them from campus. And then we will only encounter viewpoints we agree with, and we'll only feel comfortable and happy and constant affirmation that we were right all along. So I'll step down from my soapbox there, but that's where we are with this. And I realize it took a long time with that, Greg. I realize we kind of grew some stubble while waiting for me to finish.
Exactly. I was also going to blame beards for the lack of interest in hearing both sides and free speech, because that's a big thing with the millennials now. If you go back to the hippie era, you know, the facial hair going crazy was also a big factor then. So don't rule that out. But there is a solution.
Wannabe lumberjack hipsters.
That's right. Dollar Shave Club. By now, everyone knows that Dollar Shave Club ships amazing razors for just a few dollars. We've been members now for a while, and we love the great shave that it gives us. What you might not know, though, because I sure didn't, is that Dollar Shave Club doesn't just have the handle and the razor blades and the Dr. Carver shave butter, but it also has products for pretty much everything else you could possibly need in the bathroom. Body wash, shampoo, hair gel, lip balm, everything. So as soon as you hear about Dollar Shave Club and have a chance to experiment with the razor and the shave butter, you know it's a quality product. And once you try all this other stuff, I know you're going to be sold.
At the store, you're standing there in the aisle and you see too many options. You can't tell the difference between any of them. Then if you happen to manage to flag down a clerk and get their attention, I don't know about you, I find more and more that the store, that you feel like I'm in some sort of post-apocalyptic wasteland where everything's been left, but there are no store clerks anymore to help you. If you do find them, they usually don't know the difference and can't really help you since they're not experts on the products. Well, Dollar Shave Club makes it easy and convenient for you to upgrade your shave and your bathroom. You don't have to step into the store to get a high-quality shave anymore. They will deliver them right to your door. And just like their razors, everything is super high-quality and left me looking and feeling amazing. So from premium ingredients to sophisticated scents, Dollar Shave Club is changing the game.
Yeah, so if you're like me and us, as Jim just mentioned, you're sick of the nonsense at the store, now's the time to try out Dollar Shave Club. I told you, I think it was on Friday, about my horrific experience buying the cheapos, and it shredded my neck because I forgot to shave and we were shooting some videos. So it was just a horrible experience, and now I got these extra disposables that I'm never, ever going to use again because I like not bleeding. And so I just got to make sure I use my Dollar Shave Club before I leave the house. So for a limited time, Dollar Shave Club is basically giving away their starter set to new members. For only $5, this starter set features their executive razor and three trial-sized versions of their most popular products that help you stay fresh and clean. In your first box, you will receive their shave butter, the body wash, and the One Wipe Charlie's butt wipes. You will also receive their executive razor, which includes their premium, weighty handle, and the full cassette of cartridges. After that first box, replacement cartridges are sent for just a few dollars a month. This offer, though, is exclusively available. That means only available at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Dollar Shave Club's high-quality products will have you covered from face cheeks to those other cheeks. And there's no better time to try the club than now. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. Jim, we're talking about the poor judgment of college students when it comes to free speech. Let's talk about poor judgments, potentially, among political candidates trying to stand out in a crowded field. Democrats, of course, think they're going to have a big year in 2018, and they might. Historically speaking, the party not in the White House has a pretty good year, and that would mean the Democrats have that edge in 2018. And they've already got their Republicans that they want to take out. And Barbara Comstock in Virginia's 10th congressional district is always the one they try to target in Virginia. And so there are lots of Democrats in the field. So how do you stand out? Well, there's a Democrat who I guess is a veteran based on the T-shirt he's wearing in this ad, named Dan Helmer, who decided that doing a Top Gun parody was the way to get some attention and stand out in this crowded field. So if you think about the different scenes from Top Gun, which is now over 30 years old, you might wonder which one he chose. Well, it's the scene when Maverick and Goose first get to Top Gun Academy at Miramar, and they're in the, I don't know, the officers club, or it's just kind of a place where the Navy guys like to hang out. And Kelly McGillis's character is there, and Tom Cruise decides he's going to try and pick her up, and he uses the old Righteous Brothers tune of "You Lost That Love and Feeling" to try and woo her. Well, that's the tactic that Dan Helmer uses in this ad as he approaches who is supposedly Barbara Comstock sitting at the bar. And here's what happens.
You never hold town halls anymore with constituents. Planned Parenthood and Obamacare you voted against. You're trying hard not to show it, but Barbara, Barbara, you know it. You've lost that centrist feeling, 'cause you've been right-wing appealing. We've lost that loving feeling, now it's gone, gone, gone. You've got to go.
Okay. We mercifully ended that. So
we're going to have to look at the stats for this one, Greg, and see how many people just stopped listening right there. I said, you know what? I like Jim. I like Greg. I just can't stand that voice any further. Don't invite this candidate to karaoke.
First of all, Barbara Comstock voted against all the Republican bills on Obamacare, so I'm not sure what he's talking about there.
If Barbara Comstock is too right wing for you, you're basically saying I can't vote for any, you know, I can't vote for any Republican at all. She's probably about as, I'll just say she reflects the district well. I think it scores something like an R+2. This is a nominally Republican district. And Barbara Comstock, who's been a friend of National Review for a long time, one of the first person to write into National Review and say, hey, the Kerry spot is really good. So I'm always going to have a soft spot for her. By no means is she some crazed right-wing extremist who's, oh God, I'm not even going to use it. The words has lost that centrist feeling. It's just, you can just feel yourself getting dumber uttering those words.
Oh, Jim. So what do you make of choosing Top Gun 30 years after the fact? I know they're working on a sequel at some point here fairly soon, but, you know, a lot of people don't remember that, particularly younger people. You've also got different aspects of course, the original Top Gun film. If that movie came out now, the scene of Tom Cruise trying to pick up Kelly McGillis would probably be screamed down as ridiculous sexual harassment. So any other takeaways from the selection here?
Sure. Well, for the Comstock character, you never really see her face. It's played by a stand-in who I suppose looks like her from the side or behind. But the scene in Top Gun, he's doing this because he likes her, because he thinks she's good looking. He's, you may come across as a little bit crass or uninvited or unwanted, but it's coming from a place of, you have caught my eye and I wish to impress you. And I'm unafraid of doing something embarrassing in order to impress you. For the part of this Democratic candidate, it really does come across as being a jerk, because he then gets the entire bar to kind of sing. In the scene, it opens with Barbara Comstock and some other person just sitting there drinking their drinks at the bar. I have no idea whether Barbara Comstock hangs out in what looks like a sports bar. But, in this scenario, she's just there minding her own business, and this guy comes along and starts haranguing her with really, really awful singing. Secondly, as you pointed out, thanks for reminding us how old this movie is, Greg. I was feeling that old when we started this podcast. But there's this point where at the end of it, he says to the woman who's with him, who's talking, the candidate calls her Maverick. So does that make this guy Goose? Because we know what happened to Goose, right? Like, I don't, all these parallels to the movie that don't really work out there, because also, I don't know if this guy will get the nomination. If he does, and if he finishes second, well, then I guess he really is like Maverick, because the Tom Cruise character is not Top Gun. Val Kilmer is Top Gun. He's actually the best pilot out there. Something everybody always forgets and ignores from that movie, because Tom Cruise's smiling face is in the poster and everything else like that. I suppose I should give it a little bit of credit for not being boring, for creating something that it was worth selecting as a crazy martini. It's a little bit, it's bizarrely entertaining. Reminded me a bit of Demon Sheep in the California Senate race a few years ago. But I don't know if you come away from that saying, yeah, I want to vote for that guy. It's more like, wow, if this guy overcomes to open mic night, I am out of that bar.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Who will be the Iceman or Merlin or Cougar? Cougar didn't make it to Top Gun. Sorry to be a spoiler if anybody hasn't seen it yet.
You've had enough time.
Exactly. I'm guessing that probably won't make or break the race for this guy, Dan Helmer. But if being able to entertain people is now necessary to win political office, which is a question, he's probably not helping himself there. But he did get attention. So
don't quit the day job. But let's put it, if he doesn't win the primary or the general election, you know what headline I'm going with?
What's that?
Crashed and burned.
Oh, he wrote a check that his body couldn't cash.
Oh, very good. Very good. Oh, dear goodness. That's what I'm going to do. Your mouth wrote checks that your poll numbers couldn't cash.
Oh, they write themselves. Well done, Jim. All right. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our good friends at Dollar Shave Club. For just $5, you get the Executive Razor and 3 trial size versions of their most popular products. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.